Thanks for having me.
Hey, good morning. You make it sound like returning to hardcore political season is a bad thing.
Oh, you're a better man than I, Selick. All right, so what did you two think of President Trump's speech last night? John?
I think the president delivered the speech he needed to. It's pretty clear that maybe the first half or three quarters was, you know, Donald Trump on a teleprompter following message, hitting all the messages he needed to, and then he went off probably teleprompter. And that's a sort of a, like, as a sub issue, a thing with him. He didn't get popular because he was reading a teleprompter like every other politician. He got popular because he was Trump riffing. Sometimes he really struck out and missed, and sometimes he hit home runs. And that's what got him to where he's at. But we're at a far different place right now. He is the president. He needs to reassure people that left the party in 2018 that it's okay. Give them permission to kind of come back based on all these people that spoke as third party validators. And for the most part, I think he probably accomplished what he could with his speech and with his convention.
So it's interesting. The blocks that made the difference for Donald Trump in 2016 were white voters, college educated white voters, some upper and middle class white voters who apparently we saw exiting the party in the midterm elections in 2018. But what specifically, which part of that speech was aimed at them? Was it the first part on the teleprompter or the second part invoking a lot of fear?
I'll just look at it in the bigger picture. First of all, let's just admit to ourselves, these aren't conventions. We keep calling it that, but that's not what they are. Conventions are done and over with. In those big giant rooms full of people who actually had to make decisions, that was way in the past. And those big giant arenas are probably just a legacy of the past. What we have now are scripted TV miniseries, one for the Democrats, one for the Republicans. Got some Democrats in a room with some TV producers, got some Republicans in a room with TV producers, and they very carefully scripted out an 8 to 10 hour miniseries that was aimed to do two things. One, the most important thing, to unify and rally their troops. It was really important for the Democrats to kind of solder together the progressives and the moderates to go forward and keep the focus on Trump and not boil down into a fight over their differences inside their party. Trump and the Republicans needed to rally and excite their own people. I think they probably did that. And then beyond that, each one wanted to reach slightly further. So I think, you know, the Democrats were aiming to continue to pull suburban women into the party, and they were really worried about motivating their youth and their black votes. The Republicans were rallying their base and then trying to just bring back people that, all things being equal or in a vacuum, would vote for Republican policy over the policy that seems to be coming out of the Democratic Party. And their goal was just simply to remind those guys on the economy, on abortion, and to swing out Melania and Ivanka Trump and say, you know what, he's kind of rough around the edges, but you know you'd rather go with the conservative Republican policy than what the Dems are offering.
Adrian, tell me what you saw last night.
I thought that was an exceptionally bizarre performance on a number of counts. Number one, the speech was long, the longest acceptance speech in history, topping his own record from 2016. We thought Bill Clinton was verbose, but it turns out we were wrong. The other thing was, I thought it was a really interesting choice for the president and his team to frame him as the law and order president while they were engaged in a federal crime, a violation of the Hatch Act at the White House. So I thought that was some sort of delightful irony. But the speech was sort of trying to do two contradictory things at once. It was trying to rally the base, which at this point, the base of the Republican Party is non-college educated white voters. And at the same time was trying to make the president palatable to the suburban voters that he's hemorrhaging, especially women, but suburban voters in general. And unfortunately for the president and his team, the appeals that they're trying to make to these two groups are wildly different. You know, the first two thirds of the speech and the last third of the speech both sort of accomplished what they were trying to do, but they were kind of at cross purposes.
I wondered how much of the speech may have had an opposite effect from what was intended. We know that one of the things that also helped Donald Trump in 2016 was the fact that a lot of black voters stayed home, especially in places like Detroit. Do you think any of the coded language meant to inspire fear in maybe white suburban voters might have had an opposite effect on black voters and others who may have been tuning in for this as well?
I think that's absolutely the case. And this is, again, an example of the sort of contradiction that the Trump campaign is trying to sell, right? On the one hand, they like to talk about, you know, at least pre-pandemic, low black unemployment numbers. They like to tout this, the First Start, their corrections reform bill. But in the very next breath, the president's talking about, you know, longer sentences, prosecuting people to the full extent of the law, and, you know, cracking down on dissent and protest, and, you know, locking up more people in cities. So I think this is another example of the president really sort of working at cross purposes. And that sort of gives away the game to both sides. It gives away the game to black voters, certainly. But it also gives away the game to some of these more affluent college educated suburbanites. You know, they can kind of see through the double game that's being played here.
Well, and that tension was apparent last night for sure as they went back and forth. But I think what the campaign is attempting to do in the bigger picture is to deliver a message that you've been with the Democratic Party. Joe Biden kind of takes you for granted in his comments repeatedly. And when we weren't faced with COVID, I had the economy really humming and we had the lowest unemployment rate for African Americans and maybe forever. So let's talk about this in a bigger picture. And I don't necessarily think that their goal is to actually be able to win a lot more votes right now, but it is to make it to put Trump in a less negative position with that plot.
To make him seem more palatable to white voters who saw some of the black people who were shown at the speech last night, and to make them feel like maybe this guy isn't as racist as people say.
Well,
he is.
I think there's two different there's a lot of complicated information flowing out of both of these conventions, and if we think that the majority of it isn't all planned on the Democrat and the Republican side straight out of polling and focus groups, and we're fooling ourselves. President Trump certainly is the one person in this whole menagerie who tends to go with his gut and say whatever he's thinking at the moment, which leads to kind of a zigzag path instead of a linear path. But both sides are being very careful with their words and positioning. But in that case, yes, they're trying to make sure that white voters who left the party in 2018 are given permission, so to speak, that's the way I've seen it phrased, to think, okay, he's not that bad, and I can really vote my pocketbook or my policy side instead of what I'm seeing on Twitter all day long. But I don't think there's any doubt he's attempting to send a message to the African-American community as well.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with John Selleck of Harbor Strategic Public Affairs and Adrian Hemond of Grassroots Midwest about the conventions and all the speeches of the past couple of weeks. I wanted to ask you both what surprised you about these conventions, if anything. Adrian, is there anything that came to mind for you either this week or last?
You know, I think the last week, the one surprising thing for me was that Joe Biden didn't try to prosecute a little bit more of a sort of positive case about moving the country forward. I think from the Republican side, you know, I already sort of pointed to this. I was surprised that the president and his campaign couldn't really pick a lane. Every time they tried to dive into sort of rallying the base, like John was talking about, you know, they sort of pulled back a little bit. I think recognizing the sort of contradictions we were talking about in this strategy. But ultimately, I was really surprised that they didn't pick a lane. You know, John mentioned that, you know, part of how Donald Trump was successful in 2016 was sort of being himself and not, you know, not listening to the sort of messaging experts and such. I really expected him to go with his sort of full-throated base appeal. And they kind of tried to tap dance around the line. I think it was actually a little bit less effective. And that speech last night was the other surprising thing. I was really surprised that the speech that was written for Donald Trump wasn't more in the 25 to 30 minute range, because you know he's going to go off script. You know he's going to speak extemporaneously in addition to whatever you write for him. And that speech clocked in at like an hour and 15 minutes. That was crazy.
John, what was surprising to you about what we saw the past couple of weeks?
Not a lot was surprising overall. I mean, we're facing a post-COVID era of communicating now digitally, and I think most of America is probably awkwardly getting used to watching canned videos and Zoom videos and bad audio. And so these presentations probably were just sort of ho-hum, and I think that was reflected in the ratings. Both parties had much lower TV viewing ratings than we've seen in the past, mm-hmm. And that's probably a sign for what's going to happen in the future. But on the policy side of things, the issue to me that still did not get enough coverage, which is to Trump's it should be to Trump's benefit is the economy. The economy is in a bad place. And we see the headlines every day about the stock market flying high. But we need to be paying attention to the stories about individual people who are terrified that they can't pay their bills. And really, that's what Trump has to be counting on, that people don't feel that the people that were soft Republicans or supported Trump for one reason or another in the past and started drifting away because of his style start to feel that because of the economy, they don't have the luxury of voting on any other issue but the economy and their family's economic security. Biden spent, I thought, too much time on empathy. They did it very well. But he didn't talk about the economy enough because that is where Trump seems to always hold a slight edge on all polling. It's the one lane he still has here. Trump should have talked more about the economy. They did, but I don't think as much he talked more about fear to motivate those people. So I guess the economy not getting more of a center stage surprised me. I think Governor Whitmer in her remarks and Gary Peters, they clearly were focused on the auto industry and the UAW, both by doing, you know, Governor Whitmer did her speech at the UAW. Gary Peters stood in front of some cars. He got teased and mocked for looking like a used car salesman on cable comedy shows. But they were trying to go the economy or the economic route. And I think both conventions should have done more of that.
A question for both of you. Was there anything in particular that Michiganders could really chew on or should be paying attention to within the last couple of weeks of speeches and messaging? John?
No, and I hate to sound now like I'm the cynical one, but politics right now is a very intense game. And with all the different channels that we have to receive information and how unhappy people are in general about how things are going, I think they just feel like they're being bombarded with an unbelievable level of information. And the media is shouting and screaming about this happened and that happened, and Trump shouting and Biden is shouting, and everyone's going back and forth. You can't even bring up politics on Facebook without getting into a fight with your friends. You know, I tend to feel that these conventions probably are going to be forgotten about by next week, just like the impeachment and every other, and Iran and every other thing that comes along. And it's, we're dependent on what is the last issue, who has the ball last at the end of the campaign.
Speaking of the last word, Adrian, I think you might have it here. What did you see that Michigan voters could or should pay attention to at the conventions?
You know, I think John's point about the economy is right. And, you know, I think, you know, that being said, this was eminently forgettable, as John says. And unlike a normal convention, you know, you didn't really stumble across this by accident, right? You went looking for this if you wanted to see it, which in terms of motivating the bases, I feel like the Democrats did a little bit better job with that. You know, Republicans, because they're down in the polling, were really trying to tap dance between the base and the center, the more moderate folks. So I think the thing to watch down the stretch here is ultimately not anything to do with these conventions. It's what does the economy look like and what does COVID look like? And, you know, as a sort of additional issue with that, you know, how much worse does the race relations situation get in the country in terms of the racial awakening that's going on right now and the reaction to it? Those three issues are going to determine who wins the election. And unfortunately for Donald Trump, he's the president right now. And so I think that that's, you know, the focus on those three issues is probably bad. The economy's in tatters. COVID's not going all that well. And, you know, we're at a racially really tenuous point in the country. And he's the president. So he's kind of stuck with all three of those things.
You know, it was interesting. I think it was during Ivanka Trump's speech last night, she made a reference to Wisconsin dairy farmers. We realized that there wasn't really a Michigan call out for anybody who was looking for it in I guess any of the speeches that were made. That may not be entirely surprising given that the Trump campaign is not even advertising right now, but what does that indicate anything to either of you about Michigan's standing at the top of the ticket?
It doesn't necessarily, but it's clear by most of the data that Michigan's probably on the second tier of target states. We do see the vice president of the United States coming to Michigan today. So it's clear that Michigan has to remain on that second tier because, frankly, for the Republicans, anywhere the map has expanded, it expanded in the wrong way. It expanded to Arizona, expanded to Ohio, to North Carolina. That's all Republican turf. So Michigan, they can't afford to take it off the map. And by sending Vice President Trump here today, or Vice President Pence here today, they're trying to keep things, the lights on. And in case they need to come back here full speed.
Should John James be worried about the lack of attention to Michigan? Adrian, what are your thoughts?
Yes, absolutely. John James should be worried about it. Republicans in the state House of Representatives should be worried about it, too. The top of the ticket drives elections. That's almost always been true, but it's certainly true in this era of negative partisanship. The top of the ticket drives elections. Spending by the top of the ticket helps drive the outcome of elections. If the Republican presidential campaign is not on the air and spending here, it's hard to see a path to victory for John James. And it becomes a lot more possible for House Democrats to flip the state House of Representatives.
You know, and I'd probably argue the opposite. To some extent, a lot of what Adrian says rings true. But trying to compete at the local level, either at the U.S. Senate or the state House, with the hurricane level amount of spending that would happen with presidential messaging is nearly impossible. And you're stuck kind of grabbing on to the train for a ride when you're at those lower levels. What's going to happen if Trump is not dominating the airwaves in Michigan is that the conversation will not fully be about Trump all the time. It will actually allow for more oxygen for John James to take his message at Gary Peters and reverse, and for those House candidates to actually break through a little bit through all the noise.
Yeah, I think that that's largely correct in terms of the messaging environment, but I think exactly the opposite in terms of turnout. The reason that spending from the top of the ticket matters is turning your voters out to the polls, motivating them to show up. State House races certainly don't motivate voters to show up. Sometimes a U.S. Senate race can, but what really motivates people to show up is the top of the ticket. They may make different decisions further down the ballot, but that the lack of those dollars for coordinated turnout operations is a problem.
The only thing that might counter that a little bit, I noticed, is in the Dem convention, they didn't use Barack Obama and Michelle Obama and Kerry Washington and others solely to inspire. When you listen closely, they were pleading with the young voters, with African-American voters, to please make sure you actually show up and vote. They've made the choice to not go door to door to eliminate their best way of connecting to people. And they are having to do their turnout solely on pleading, begging, and digital. They're a little nervous about those people showing up and not just being cynical and staying home. And we've seen in most of the national polling, the Trump supporters, when they ask who's most excited, Trump tends to be ahead of Biden by quite a bit. So that'll be a negating factor to some extent going forward. But sure, would the Republicans rather have a ton of spending here at the top? Of course they would. But it's a complicated set of issues.
John Selleck of Harbor Strategic Public Affairs. We've also been talking with Adrian Hemond at Grassroots Midwest. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.